Chapter 1 No one noticed the rock. And for a very good reason. The rock was nondescript. One of millions of chunks of rock and ice floating in the parabolic orbit of a long-dead, short-period comet, looking just like any chunk of that deceased comet might. The rock was smaller than some, larger than others, but on a distribution scale there was nothing to distinguish it one way or another. On the almost unfathomably small chance that the rock was spotted by a planetary defense grid, a cursory examination would show the rock to be composed of silicates and some ores, which is to say, a rock, not nearly large enough to cause any real damage. This was an academic matter for the planet currently intersecting the path of the rock and several thousand of its brethren. It had no planetary defense grid. It did, however, have a gravity well into which the rock fell, along with those many brethren. Together they would form a meteor shower, as so many chunks of ice and rock did each time the planet intersected the comet's orbit, once per planetary revolution. No intelligent creature stood on the surface of this bitterly cold planet, but if one had, it could have looked up and seen the pretty streaks and smears of these little chunks of matter as they burned in the atmosphere, superheated by the friction of air against rock. The vast majority of these newly minted meteors would vaporize in the atmosphere, their matter transmuted during their incandescent fall from a discrete and solid clump to a long smudge of microscopic particles. These would remain in the atmosphere indefinitely, until they became the nuclei of water droplets, and the sheer mass of the water dragged them to the ground as rain, or more likely, given the nature of the planet, snow. This rock, however, had mass on its side. Chunks flew as the atmospheric pressure tore open hairline cracks in the rock's structure, the stress of plummeting through the thickening mat of gases, exposing structural flaws and weaknesses, and exploiting them violently. Fragments sheared off, sparkled brilliantly and momentarily, and were consumed by the sky. And yet, at the end of its journey through the atmosphere, enough remained to impact the planet's surface, the flaming bolus smacking hard and fast onto a plane of rock that had been blown clean of ice and snow by high winds. The impact vaporized the rock and a modest amount of the plane, excavating an equally modest crater. The rock plane, which extended for a significant distance on and below the planet's surface, rang with the impact like a bell, harmonics pealing several octaves below the hearing range of most known intelligent species. The ground trembled. And in the distance, beneath the planet's surface, someone finally noticed the rock. "Quake," said Charon. She didn't look up from her monitor. Several moments later, another tremor followed. "Quake," said Charon. Kynan looked over to his assistant from his own monitor.
"Are you planning to do this every time?"
he asked.
"I want to keep you informed of events as they happen," Charon said.
"I appreciate the sentiment," Kynan said, "but you really don't have to mention it every single time. I am a scientist. I understand that when the ground moves, we're experiencing a quake. Your first declaration was useful. By the fifth or sixth time, it gets monotonous."
Another rumble.
"Quake," said Charon. "That's number 7. Anyway, you're not a tectonicist. This is outside your many fields of expertise."
Despite Charon's typical deadpan delivery, the sarcasm was hard to miss. If Kynan hadn't been sleeping with his assistant, he might have been irritated. As it was, he allowed himself to be tolerantly amused.
"I don't recall you being a master tectonicist," he said.
"It's a hobby," said Charon.
Kynan opened his mouth to respond, and then the ground suddenly and violently launched itself up to meet him. It took a moment for Kynan to realize it wasn't the floor that jerked up to meet him. He had been suddenly driven to the floor. He was now haphazardly sprawled on the tiles,
along with about half the objects formerly positioned on his workstation. Kynan's work stool lay capsized a body length to the right, still teetering from the upheaval. He looked over to Charon, who was no longer looking at her monitor, in part because it lay shattered on the ground, near where Charon herself was toppled.
"What was that?" Kynan asked.
"Quake?"
Charon suggested, somewhat hopefully, and then screamed as the lab bounced energetically around them again. Lighting and acoustic panels fell from the ceiling. Both Kynan and Charon struggled to crawl under workbenches. The world imploded around them for a while as they cowered under their tables. Presently the shaking stopped. Kynan looked around in what flickering light still remained and saw the majority of his lab on the floor, including much of the ceiling and part of the walls. Usually the lab was filled with workers and Kynan's other assistants, but he and Charon had come in late to finish up some sequencing. Most of his staff had been in the base barracks, probably asleep. Well, they were awake now. A high, keening noise echoed down the hall leading to the lab.
"Do you hear that?"
Charon asked. Kynan gave an affirmative head dip.
"It's the siren for battle stations."
"We're under attack," Charon asked. "I thought this base was shielded."
"It is," Kynan said. "Or was. Supposed to be, anyway."
"Well, a fine job, I must say," Charon said.
Now Kynan was irritated.
"Nothing is perfect, Charon," he said.
"Sorry,"
Charon said, keying in on her boss's sudden irritation. Kynan grunted, and then slid out from underneath his workbench and picked his way to a toppled-over storage locker.
"Come help me with this," he said to Charon.
Between them, they maneuvered the locker to where Kynan could shove open the locker door. Inside was a small projectile gun and a cartridge of projectiles.
"Where did you get this?" Charon asked.
"This is a military base, Charon," Kynan said. "They have weapons. I have two of these. One is here and one is back in the barracks. I thought they might be useful if something like this happened."
"We're not military," Charon said.
"And I'm sure that will make a huge difference to whoever is attacking the base," Kynan said,
and offered the gun to Charon.
"Take this."
"Don't give that to me," Charon said. "I've never used one. You take it."
"Are you sure?" Kynan said.
"I'm sure," Charon said. "I'd just end up shooting myself in the leg."
"All right,"
Kynan said. He mounted the ammunition cartridge into the gun and slipped the gun into a coat pocket.
"We should head to our barracks. Our people are there. If anything happens, we should be with them."
Charon mutely gave her assent. Her usual sarcastic persona was now entirely stripped away. She looked drained and frightened. Kynan gave her a quick squeeze.
"Come on, Charon," he said. "We'll be all right. Let's just try to get to the barracks."
The two had begun to weave through the rubble in the hall when they heard the sub-level stairwell doors slide open. Kynan peered through the dust and low light to make out two large forms coming through the door. Kynan began to backtrack toward the lab. Charon, who had the same thought rather faster than her boss, had already made it to the lab doorway. The only other way off the floor was the elevator, which lay past the stairwell. They were trapped. Kynan patted his coat pocket as he retreated. He didn't have all that much more experience with a gun than Charon, and was not at all confident that he'd be able to hit even one target at a distance, much less two, each presumably a trained soldier.
"Administrator Kynan," said one of the forms.
"What?"
Kynan said, in spite of himself, and immediately regretted giving himself away.
"Administrator Kynan," said the form again. "We've come to retrieve you. You're not safe here."
The form walked forward into a splay of light and resolved itself into Aten Rant, one of the base commandants. Kynan finally recognized him by the clan design on his carapace and his insignia. Aten Rant was an Enishan, and Kynan was vaguely ashamed to admit that even after all this time at the base, they all still looked alike to him.
"Who is attacking us?" Kynan asked.
How did they find the base?
We're not sure who is attacking us or why,
Aten Rant said. The clicking of his mouthpieces was translated into recognizable speech by a small device that hung from his neck. Aten Rant could understand Kynan without the device, but needed it to speak with him.
The bombardment came from orbit, and we've only now targeted their landing craft.
Aten Rant advanced on Kynan. Kynan tried not to flinch. Despite their time here and their relatively good working relationship, he was still nervous around the massive insectoid race.
Administrator Kynan, you cannot be found here. We need to get you away from here before the base is invaded.
All right, Kynan said. He motioned Sharon forward to come with him.
Not her, Aten Rant said. Only you.
Kynan stopped.
She's my aide. I need her, he said.
The base shook from another bombardment. Kynan felt himself slam into a wall and collapsed to the ground. As he fell, he noted that neither Aten Rant nor the other Enishan soldier had moved so much as a fraction from their position.
This is not an appropriate time to debate the issue, Administrator,
Aten Rant said. The flat effect of the translation device gave the comment an unintentionally sardonic quality. Kynan began to protest again, but Sharon gently took hold of his arm.
Kynan, he's right, she said. You need to get out of here. It's bad enough any of us are here, but you being found here would be a very bad thing.
I won't leave you here, Kynan said.
Kynan,
Sharon said, and pointed at Aten Rant, who was standing by, impassive.
He's one of the highest-ranking military officers here. We're under attack. They're not going to send someone like him on a trivial errand. And now is not the time to argue anyway. So go. I'll find my way back to the barracks. We've been here a while, you know. I remember how to get there.
Kynan stared at Sharon for a minute, and then pointed past Aten Rant to the other Enishan soldier.
You,
he said.
Escort her to her barracks.
I need him with me, Administrator,
Aten Rant said.
You can handle me by yourself, Kynan said. And if she doesn't get the escort from him, she'll get the escort from me.
Aten Rant covered his translation device and motioned the soldier over. They leaned in close and clacked at each other quietly, not that it mattered, as Kynan didn't understand Enishan language. Then the two separated, and the soldier went to stand by Sharon.
He will take her to our barracks,
Aten Rant said.
But there is to be no more argument from you. We have wasted too much time already. Come with me now, Administrator.
He reached out, grabbed Kynan by the arm, and pulled him toward the stairwell door. Kynan glanced back to see Sharon staring up fearfully at the immense Enishan soldier. This final image of his assistant and lover disappeared as Aten Rant shoved him through the doorway.
That hurt, Kynan said.
Quiet,
Aten Rant said, and pushed Kynan forward on the stairs. They began to climb. The Enishan's surprisingly short and delicate lower appendages matching Kynan's own stride up the steps.
It took far too long to find you and too long to get you moving. Why were you not in your barracks?
We were finishing up some work, Kynan said. It's not as if we have much else to do around here. Where are we going now?
Up, Aten Rant said. There is an underground service railroad we need to get to.
Kynan stopped for a moment and looked back at Aten Rant, who, despite being several steps below him, was nearly at the same height.
That goes to hydroponics, Kynan said.
Kynan, Sharon, and other members of his staff would go to the base's immense underground hydroponics bay on occasion for the greenery. The planet's surface was not exactly inviting, unless hypothermia was something you enjoyed. Hydroponics was the closest you could get to being outside.
Hydroponics is in a natural cave,
Aten Rant said, prodding Kynan back into motion.
An underground river lies beyond it, in a sealed area. It flows into an underground lake. There is a small living module hidden there that will hold you.
You never told me about this before, Kynan said.
We did not expect the need to tell you, Aten Rant said.
Am I swimming there?
Kynan asked.
There is a small submersible, Uttenrent said. It will be cramped, even for you. But it has already been programmed with the location of the module.
And how long will I be staying there?
Let us hope no time at all, Uttenrent said.